whole world. Look around you. Look at this. We created this. This didn't exist before we were here. Look around at the square. I promise you right now, we did this. Doesn't matter what anybody says. They can say it's disrespectful. They can say it's this and that and that. Everybody's within the rules. Everybody's doing their thing. All we are is proud and passionate.
Gather around. I'm glad everybody came out tonight. As we stand on our neighborhood corner, know that this fire that's burning represents the passion you have. Listen, I recognize all of you, every creed and color. With that being said,
attention, please, attention, please. This here feels like a whole entire world collapse.
We had.
Say what?
A whole lot of superstars on this stage here tonight.
Hey, yo. You ready? Let's do it.
Okay, I'm reloaded.
Now, before I finish, let me just say, I did not come here to show out. Did not come here to impress you. Because to tell you the truth, when I leave here, I'm gone. And I don't care what you think about me. But just remember, when it hits the fan, brother, whether it's next year, 10 years, 20 years from now, you'll never be able to say that these brothers lied to you, Jack.
Buddha blesses.
From the sports bars to the stands, we are the voice of the fans. You are now plugged into the Section 357 show, the Ball Street Journal, where we always have the best seats in the house. The remix, the return for 2020. Fellas, how y'all doing?
Doing fantastic, as always. Oh my gosh, it's been so long since I've been able to say that to all the fans out there. Fellas, great to get you all together to talk about this again. The Section 357 show, sports, hip-hop, a little bit of everything. Ronnie, how you doing?
Certainly, this is interesting times, strange times, weird times, or whatever other adjective you can put in front of it. But it's good to hear from y'all. 5 years. Feels like yesterday. Good to be back talking about all things and culture and corona and everything, but I'm just glad to get it popping. I'm gonna swing this out to the mountains, the Rocky Mountains, my man. Now Denver Trey, no longer LA Trey. What's happening, man?
Yo, what is going on, fellas? It has been so long. I'm having a hard time wrapping my mind around all of this. 5 years, brothers, has it been that long? Oh my God. Yeah, I guess so. Since we're switching from LA Trey to Denver Trey, what's up, everybody? Thank you for tuning in. I cannot wait. I can't wait, actually, for us to jump into all of the madness that this new world has brought us. But not nearly as much as I'm happy to hear from our next amazing person on this show, JQ the runner, JQ the DJ, my homeboy, just JQ. Tell me how you feel, brother.
Hey, it's a new kid on the block, JQ. Coming from Chicago, I one thing to say, right now I feel like I am legend, Will Smith, out here in these streets, battling all these aliens, just getting ready for what's coming tomorrow and not knowing how it's going. But I got my crew. We've seen the light. We've been talking sports. He's been talking all of this for an eternity. I appreciate y'all letting me on the 357 show. I'm gonna pass this back to super producer Floyd to do his thing.
I want to jump this off with my man Big Shot Ron, because I feel like this whole coronavirus thing, and really, let me just back up a quick second. What more incredible time to have a sports podcast return for a special engagement than a moment where there's almost no sports actually happening? NBA is canceled, NFL is trying to figure their things out, MLB is pushed back, Euro soccer is pushed back. So just to really think about these current times that we're in right now and let that set in for a moment, I want to kick it over to Big Shot Ron, because I feel like the NBA was kind of the league that had a lot of courage to make a bold call to really respond to this coronavirus situation. So Big Shot Ron, give us some sense of like a timeline of how this all broke down.
Well, I mean, it started really toward the beginning of March as the NCAA regular season was closing. You started to hear like little rumblings about what they were going to do with the conference tournaments. There was talk of limited seating. Then there was talk about no fans. And Terns would kind of start to make their plans. And then that fateful night when Rudy Gobert became the first, what we want to say, American athlete, I guess. Not even the United States of France. But when Rudy Gobert tested positive for coronavirus, that essentially set off the alarm throughout the American sporting culture. The NBA then postponed this season immediately. March Madness was then postponed a couple days later. Conference tournaments almost started postponing immediately. So in some ways, depending on how you want to think about it, I saw an article in the New York Times that Rudy Gobert saved the America, because I think in our country, and I'll pass this on to D, I think there was a real ignorance or sort of a real lighthearted approach to Corona. But once the NBA postponed its season, then it was like, oh, snap, this is real. And you look at what's going on across the country with shelter in place and lockdowns and quarantines and all that stuff. It really started with Rudy Gobert, and it started when the NBA postponed its season.
Ronnie, that's a good point, but let's not forget the thing that really was leading all these sports leagues was capitalism. Without a shadow of a doubt, none of these leagues, from the NBA, certainly the NCAA with their slave labor and the NCAA tournament, to the NHL and its season conflicts, to the MLB, you look at what's going on with European soccer, none of them wanted to stop playing games. That's why you heard initially, as you said, the talks of playing games in empty stadiums, so they could at least have gotten the TV rights. But you're right. I do want to credit the NBA for taking that first step and the dramatic step of canceling the season. But then you look at the NCAA and how they were almost forced to cancel the conference and NCAA tournament due to Duke and Kansas saying that they just weren't playing ball at all, right? So yes, it helped that Rudy Gobert, you know, touched all those microphones and made a big deal out of it. But don't get it twisted. None of these leagues wanted to do what they had to do. But at the end of the day, it was the right thing, although it really, really stinks as a fan.
Real quick, JQ, I would love for you to chime in, man, because of all of us, you were the one who is probably the most internationally active sportsman, being a marathoner as such. As you were planning your race schedule for this season, or I would say as you were keeping an eye on all of the international races, when did you first become aware that something might have been sort of off kilter in the running world? Maybe not in America, but just globally. Like, when did you first get some sense that something was not quite right when it came to coronavirus and the response to it?
So, quick backstory. I have been a marathoner for maybe 3-4 years now. Ran the London Marathon, I've run the Chicago Marathon. So two internationally renowned marathons. I plan to run New York coming up soon, and run in Chicago in the fall if it stays up. But, you know, one of the big things with marathons is there's an international buzz around it. There are 6 world qualifying marathons that all lead up to Boston being the biggest one. The first one of the year is Tokyo in February. And I remember this distinctly, sitting in Atlanta, just finding out that I was getting into the Chicago Marathon, and also getting word from one of my girls, hey, you know, Tokyo is going to do this drastic thing, given everything that's been happening in China and the spread of the coronavirus throughout Asia. Specifically, they were set up in, I'll call it mid-February, to eliminate all non-elite runners and the crowd from participating in the race. So races, marathons, typically can range from 10,000 to probably about 30, 40,000 participants, maybe even more depending on the weather and the nature of the race. So we're saying Tokyo, major city that'll be hosting the Olympics later this summer, and that's still in the air, had taken the drastic means of saying, you know, less than 100 both regular running athletes and para athletes, those athletes who are in a wheelchair, were going to be permitted to actually run the Tokyo Marathon. And as we know, that has played out into the Tokyo Marathon being canceled, all major races being canceled in the world from February going forward, and just a rethinking and revisiting on how to deal with those things that are being planned in the future, involving crowds, involving sportsmen who, and sportsmen and sportswomen who would be running and or doing anything in close proximity, and just sport in general, which I think has taken a very big turn just from this past month, just from this past week. And it's going to be interesting how our year looks going ahead.
Denver Trey, Mile High Trey, you're the biggest gamer out of all of us. You're the one who's plugged into the esports, you know, infrastructure, the digital world, if you will. What's been your response to seeing how we've shifted into the real life culture to digital culture?
To quote Bane from Batman, you were simply introduced to the world of quarantine and isolation. I was born in it, raised in it. I didn't see outside until I was a man. Now everybody's feeling that. Brothers, sisters, this is what we do. This has been our moment to shine. Gamers, isolationists, people that spend their entire time behind closed doors, twiddling their sticks, playing games like NBA 2K, Madden, Call of Duty. We have been ready for this, and it is showing. It's showing in places such as Steam, a platform that is used primarily for PC gaming, where they have been breaking records week after week regarding the amount of people that have subscribed. The last record they broke was like in 2018. Now they're doing it every single day, 20 million a day, 21 million a day, 22 million a day. It's becoming the new escape. And it's not just our sofa gamers. It's affecting our real world athletes and sports heroes. We've got Call of Duty tournaments happening from the likes of people like Ben Simmons, Royce O'Neal, Josh Hart, Zach LaVine, Donovan Mitchell, all of these people who are stuck at home but still have that intense need and desire to have to compete. You can check them out playing Call of Duty. And here's the thing that's interesting to me about them playing Call of Duty. It's not NBA 2K. It's not John Madden's new football. It's not sports gaming. You have sports stars playing non-traditional games, which is only going to grow this industry of gaming even bigger, because most armchair quarterbacks or living room point guards typically only play video games that deal with the sport that they love. But now that we have all of this cross-platforming going, now we have these NBA stars playing Call of Duty. It's showing people that may have been non-traditional gamers a new way of entertaining themselves.
I'm curious, Trey, from your perspective, is the infrastructure ready for this? Because it's not just gaming that's seen an uptick, right? Now you have everybody having to go to Google Hangouts to conduct business, or Zoom. Everyone is being forced online because of, you know, both work and play. Do you feel like the infrastructure is ready for this? Have you seen any disruptions in service, you know, from either full stage blackouts or, you know, things being slower? How do you feel like the infrastructure is handling all of this new traffic?
That is an amazing question. And the truth of the matter is no, but it's not no to the point that you should panic. No, because we're having platforms such as Netflix being told by the European Union to have to tone things down because they're eating up all the bandwidth. And what I mean by that is Netflix has been streaming HD quality movies and TV shows, which double and triple the amount of bandwidth that they would typically have if they were streaming regular standard def. Everybody is moving to a digital front, so the infrastructure is having to try to adjust to this.
shifting it back to actually the sports side of things, fellas, we have no sports right now. So, D, Big Shot Ron, I would love for y'all to chime in. What are y'all watching? How are y'all adjusting? What does this new non-sports frontier look like?
I can't speak for D, but I will tell you, I have been on, speaking to Trey's point about infrastructure, I've been on like YouTube binge since all of this started. I've watched a minimum amount of television over the past 7 to 10 days. So as far as a sports fix, there's a couple of like European football channels that I follow that actually have people of color, minority presenters, try to support the brothers on that. Been watching some sketch comedy based out of LA with some more brothers, independent of course. So my sports viewing in the last 10 days or since all this is broken has been like minimum, because I just can't watch SportsCenter on a loop for 24 hours. I can't do Skippy Shannon when there's literally nothing to talk about. So my current sports has been super dry for about the last 7 to 10 days. D, I don't know about you, how you've been getting that fix in, but it's definitely dry on this side.
Well, we did have that little shot of NFL free agency. We actually had a lot of deals that were relevant to the crew and players going back and forth between the Rams, the Bears, the Falcons, the Titans. So that brought a little bit of joy. But no, I have to admit, like you, Ronnie, I really just haven't been able to watch sports. I pay for the NFL Game Pass. I'd love to go back and watch old Rams games. The NFL recently made that free. NBA allowed their league pass to be free. But there's just something about watching non-live or replayed sports that just isn't the same. Unless it's your team, you know, making the tackle at the one-yard line and winning the Super Bowl, it's really hard to get excited about previous games. And you saw how ESPN2 switched to the Ocho, and is playing all types of weird things like rock tossing and arm wrestling and dodgeball, but it just isn't the same. It does not capture my attention the way that even the XFL did. I was into the XFL as it was going on, the St. Louis Battlehawks, you know, go St. Louis. But without live sports, just can't do it. So like Ronnie, I've switched. I've been watching movies. I've been watching shows. Without any live sports, they're struggling to get my attention.
No Euro soccer or football, as we call it. No MLB, no NBA, no NCAA. It's pretty dry out here. And for some folks who monitor the business side of sports, I'm sure they're pretty much in their feelings right now, not sure when things are going to come back to normal. I think this time of the year, early March, is really when baseball would have been kicking off. So to JQ, who I know is a big baseball fan, what do you think, just kind of pulling, you know, some general thoughts together, will be the business impact of what we're going to see when things return, if they return? Like, what do you think might be the new normal, if you will, in this sports / business landscape?
So I'll lean on baseball first, because season was about to start. Teams were in spring training in all the warm states, so Florida, Arizona, kicking off. They are already catching revenues, getting a sense of the fever that was going to hit, and then bam, nothing. So there's a dichotomy, I think, in sports, based on sports teams, right? And the cities and communities that actually support them. So when I'm thinking baseball, you have teams such as the Arizona Diamondbacks, and or, you know, Miami. Teams that are pretty good, but they're not having fans come out to fill the seats every single game. And they have to do all these alternative things to get fans to actually, you know, entertain themselves, because their teams aren't winning. So they're buying money on food, they're having specialty nights, etc. versus the Chicago Cubs, recently bought by a family. And for the pure purpose, when they were purchased, they weren't winning, but they filled the stands every single night because it was a community event. It was a family event. It's something that gets people from other states and around the world to actually come and fill those seats. It's a multi-billion dollar organization, very similar to the New York Yankees and such, but without the payroll. And then they started winning championships, which made tickets much more expensive and harder to come by. All of that lost. Bigger loss for very big city venues like New York and Chicago versus some of the non-winning and or I'll call it minor city venues. But at the end of the day, you know, what are people going to do with their time? What are those sports fans who like going, you know, to live sports going to do with their time and their money? Are you going to be sitting at home watching old games? I think I just flipped Master D over the 2011 St. Louis Cardinals championship reel, highlights for their season. You know, are people just going to go outside and run and do push-ups on Instagram and challenge each other? Like, what are people doing for activity with their money and also with their time? You know, Trey mentioned a little bit earlier about gaming. You know, gaming is something that can stay afloat during this this unfortunate pandemic. But sports, as we know it, has changed forever. How is conditioning going to step up? What is happening, you know, to the Olympics? You know, if it does get canceled, how are all these athletes who are in sports that have been paused or discontinued going to go ahead without potentially months of training in their field? So all these questions have yet to be answered. It's a money game. It is a person game. It is a crowd game. And there's not as concrete answer but to just try to stay in shape, stay informed, for consumers to keep their money in their pockets so when things do finally get in their way, they can actually have something to spend it on, and to try to stay positive about the entire thing because, you know, this could be looming for a while. So with that, I'm going to hand it back to folks, and we'll see where the conversation goes.
Yeah, if I can jump in here, I do want to talk about that. I mean, first off, let's think about these college athletes in NCAA basketball, even other smaller sports that, you know, had their chance to get championships, to play in the big games, and all that is dashed now. I mean, think of these seniors, these players that are about to go pro, just missing out on that opportunity. And I hate to talk about players that are going pro and that are more than likely going to make, you know, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars. I'm not feeling too sorry for them, but theoretically, you could have players missing out on millions of dollars right now because of the issues with the coronavirus. You have a player like Tua out of Alabama who has big questions with his health, where teams can't medically check him out. That is a big deal going into the NFL draft, is players being able to check out the health of players with injuries. So he could potentially lose out on a bunch of money. This is affecting free agency. So I'm not going to cry too much spilled milk for these, you know, superstar athletes, but just these minor things we have to think about that are kind of flying under the radar. This is totally changing the landscape of the NFL draft, the NFL free agency, even MLB, and probably the NHL.
This is the Section 357 show. This is Ball Street Journal. We'll be right back.
This week on Yankee and the Brave.
Back at it like a crack addict, Mr. Black Magic, crack a bitch back, chiropractic, craftmatic, big daddy smoking big, Cali in a black alley in a black grand addy, rolling down old natty, how napping Maddie as a black granddaddy, all back, no capping, fat black, boat captain, stay floating, no flapping, wave runner, I'm a gunner, I'ma have your block hot as a sunner all summer, and I put that on Osama and my motherfucking mama. I'ma terrorize the actors playing like they want some drama. I'ma chop them with a chopper till I motherfucking drop.
Black addict, I'm back with the blackest fabric. I'm back, I'm magically racking it. That's when I'm ducking rat-a-tat-tats. I'm running the trunk of a sucker shit. Matter of fact, it's the acid, even the crack. Automatic facts, it's like that.
Welcome back to the Section 357 show, the Ball Street Journal. You got your mobile quarterbacks here, your Ball Street reporters, your young OGs in the sports talk game here. Fellas, the other side of this coin when it comes to all of the cancellations of all of the sporting leagues is similar cancellations when it comes to music and concerts. So one of the first big concerts of the year, or festivals, if you will, is Coachella. They had to cancel. And then you saw other things like the Met Gala, they canceled. The iHeartRadio Awards, they canceled. So in the same way that the ball players are seeing, you know, their profession go through it, the artists are as well, but maybe with a different type of impact, because for some of these sports leagues, they're still paying their athletes on their certain teams. If you're a performer and you were counting on, you know, show money or festival money, perhaps you got that advance, but definitely, you know, that back end is in question. So want to get some thoughts from you all on what you all have seen when it comes to the music side of this, whether it be artists that you've seen passing the time away, or just playing more music that you maybe missed out on before. I'll say this, I think the biggest response from the music side of this has been Mr. D. Nice and his sort of global nightclub DJ set situation, where he had the whole world tuned in to the tune of 100,000 people showing up for the party. I think that's been the biggest highlight thus far when it comes to how we've been responding to this as far as hip hop, the whole D Nice homeschooling situation. But fellas, any other things pop out to you all as far as on the music side, on the hip hop side, things that you've been sort of plugged into since we've been on self-quarantine, or I guess we call it shelter in place? Anybody else?
I wonder, especially with the success of the D Nice homeschool, if this, we talk about the new normal, and I know Trey, Floyd, you all are super plugged into current music, and on JQ as well, JQ also DJ. If now this doesn't become the new norm, where we are kind of done with concerts, we're kind of done with the big tour, and now the online concert becomes the thing, and not because... Because one, I think from a cost point of view to throw it, obviously it's a lot cheaper. Maybe as an artist, you might be able to recoup some of that money back quicker. So I think really it's a great question for y'all three, who are really more plugged into it, is post-coronavirus, does the online concert, you know, we already know how downloads and streams of music have gone through the roof. Drake and Future had a project come out during this time. So are we really seeing basically the coronavirus pushes the last, what you would call, physical aspect of music out of here, if not permanently, at least for the foreseeable future?
If nothing else, this coronavirus pandemic is kicking the tires on every single industry that is out there, especially that of sports, and particularly and specifically that of music. DJ D Nice started with 200 people, I want to say Wednesday or Thursday night, grew up to 100,000 people on a live Instagram, just rocking out for hours at a time to him playing mix and getting shout outs from everybody, from getting and giving shout outs to everybody from Rihanna to Puffy. Joe Biden showed up. Michelle Obama was online. He got a shout out from Valerie Jarrett, the Obama special advisor. Bernie and Lizzo were there for the party. I'm talking about, this was global events. One thing as we here at the Section 357 show deal with statistics is D Nice started out with about 250,000 followers on Instagram, you know, before his show started Saturday. And this morning was up to over 750,000 some odd followers. So when you took a look at what he did with his moment in time, with his face and with his touch on the internet, and the viral nature, no pun intended, of his home party, he is going to become a big influencer. You know, probably reaching over 1 million followers by the end of, probably by the beginning of this week. Number two, you know, as he does things like this, other artists are going to copy, which number one, increases their popularity, increases their streams while they are able to tour. You know, you have artists, like you said before, Drake and the Light dropping music. When you take a look internationally, from the UK artist, months ago, artist named Stormzy, who was a big grime guy, had to cancel his Asia tour. And he had the foresight of, hey, not getting the fans out there and not getting in trouble. And Glastonbury, which is a longest standing UK London based concert, was canceled after holding on to the last strike after Coachella and some of the others had ended, which eliminated, let's say, K-Dot from performing among some of the US artists that travel abroad for these international tours. So I think the way of promoting oneself as a musician, the way of making money as a musician, being an influencer as a musician, is going to change. It's going to lean a lot more on technological innovation, viral nature of passing music and message, as well as making sure that you can be heard by new fans who had never heard you before, but from a virtual wave, just get the opportunity to be in the same venue with yourself and others of prominence who just want to have a good time in the midst of panic, chaos, and the like.
I think nothing moves until we see the numbers. And what I mean by that is that, let's just take, for instance, comedy and Netflix. When a couple of comedic performers went on Netflix and started doing their own specials, nobody really paid a whole lot of attention to it until some of the numbers started dropping. So we started finding out that Dave Chappelle was making $15 million or $40 million for a three-part episode. When we started hearing the numbers, that's when we started seeing the shift to something being a random thing that we enjoy to it becoming now the comedic standard, all right? So if we can place those same rules to music, let's take, for example, I wonder how much money Beyonce got when she dropped Homecoming on Netflix. You know, was it a straight up, did they get buy it out? Did she get buy it out? She get like a $10, $15 million check or $40 million? I'm wondering what the numbers are like for D-Nice. Like, it's cool to have followers. That's fine, you know, because attention has the potential to pay out huge. But I'm wondering, was he selling merchandise? Was he selling some of his mixtapes, other people's albums, opportunities through his Twitter website, through his sales funnels and all that? Like, what are the numbers? If the numbers show up that you can downsize a big production, such as hosting a huge concert that you would have at Coachella, to something that, say, Erykah Badu has, where she's doing a smaller venue, like in her own home, and then she finds some way to monetize it. And if we find out that those numbers are really good, then it will absolutely become the standard. You're dealing with less money, less problems, less people, more profit. If that is the truth, then yes, we are looking at the future.
LA, oh, I'm sorry. Denver, Trey, quick Google. Beyonce was paid $20 million specifically for Homecoming, part of $60 million overall. But I get your point. Again, I started off the episode talking about capitalism. It all comes down to that. You guys know how I am. I am not the music hip-hop person on this show. But what I would like to highlight, just really quick, I hope I'm not going too far off topic, is things kind of like what D-Nice did, but what something like Debbie Allen did on Instagram Live, where she hosted a live dancing tutorial. It's not going to make the money. She's already a big name. She doesn't need the props. But something small like that gave me something to do with my daughter in the house that I think deserves just as much props as D-Nice and what he did on Instagram Live.
I think both Debbie and D-Nice have become case studies, if you will, in how brands could engage going forward. If you have a certain brand that aligns with the artist and they can create a moment where people can pay attention to it, I think it'll be profitable. The thing that made D Nice's set so amazing was, yes, the music was great, but also it was clear and you could hear it. So much of what happens online does come down to production value. And I think that if you're able to create a great production experience for the viewer or the listener, then you can really monetize that. I heard other DJs who were spinning online and the audio wasn't anywhere as great as what D Nice had. So if you can create a moment for an artist who can perform or play some exclusive music via that platform, I'm sure a brand, whether it be clothing, whether it be a beverage sponsor, whether it be a car company, would want to be a part of that. If you're D Nice and you can get 100,000 people to chime in, there's going to be a brand that wants to be a partner with you on that, especially if you're getting the other influencers to check in, the Naomi Campbells, the Diddy's, the Lenny Kravitz's of the world, Quincy Jones. If you're getting everyone else to chime in, then I think that can be lucrative for you. And I think that they are, D Nice and Debbie, are going to be interesting test cases as people move forward with how to manage in this digital space. But fellas, as we wrap up, I would love for y'all to give any final thoughts on anything that we talked about. Coronavirus, the sports response, the music response, just personal reflections on this unprecedented time that we're in right now. Anything that comes to mind as far as what you're feeling right now. I feel like we kind of brought this episode to the forefront because it was really strange times and kind of created a moment for us to really do this. But do y'all have any thoughts on just this moment in time where we are right now?
I saw a quote on Facebook from a Facebook friend of mine that said, "I'm not scared of the virus. I'm scared of the implications after the virus is gone." And while I won't say I'm scared, I think post-corona life is going to be very interesting, very different. And I think it's just something that we all have to really pay attention to. I'm not a big news guy. I get all my news from my man D. So all my corona news and political news comes from D. But I think the after corona life is going to be very interesting. I think, you know, we've used the words life changing, game changing. We're not saying that just as cliche. I think it's going to be a very interesting world we live in the short term and potentially the long term post corona. So stay safe, be mindful, wash your hands. And last thing, when y'all going to buy all that toilet paper, soap and vitamins is cool too. Just saying.
Big Shot Ron, I love how you assume that there is going to be a life after the coronavirus. I mean, I'm personally just, you know, watching out for the zombies out there. But let me take this away from the realm slightly of sports and bring it into the realm of politics. And forgive me for all of y'all out there on the Yang Gang, but I wanna attack the billionaires a little bit. We saw, speaking of capitalism in sports, we saw the way that Zion kind of helped to donate some money to help people that are employed by the stadiums who were no longer able to host games. I just wanted to reiterate how important it is, how disturbing it is, in fact, how disturbing it is that it takes millionaire employees to go out and donate their money to help out people that are employed by billionaires. That's something that needs to get fixed. I don't know if it'll happen in the post-corona world, though.
My final thought is I'm curious to just see how the money moves on all of this. Theoretically, it does seem like our country, our world is at a precipice of change. I do see the silver lining that there could be some brand new opportunities for people to reach markets that weren't recently pursued. For example, Kroger's, which is a food store in my small town of Clarksville, Tennessee, was about to close, but now because of having food delivered, new life has been breathed into the company. We're seeing new ways, innovative ways for people to make their money, like people that are our lovely ladies that are in exotic dancing strippers are finding, you know, new ways to sell their product, which is themselves either virtually and or on a private scale, whereas instead of coming to a club and maybe compromising their safety, what was an issue. We're seeing companies as a whole hire brand new delivery drivers in order to move product from one service to the consumer, and it's creating a whole new area of jobs that are being created. And I'm also curious to see how the country responds to this many people who could potentially lose their jobs as a result of being unemployed for such a long time, and how our country responds regarding some form of compensation. What can be done to help the people when the options may be limited? And I'm also curious to see the people that innovate, because anytime that there's a time of crisis such as this, there are people that find the angles and not just shine, but thrive and set the standard. I'm hedging my bets towards the silver lining that our country and our people and our thought process on how to gain money and how to socialize becomes stronger because we were forced to have to really think about it. So, hey, I'm Team USA, I'm Team World. I'm over here waving my flag because I know it's going to get ugly, but I think it's going to get better as well. We just gotta hold on. Just hold on, world. Hold on, America. We're going to be all right.
Picking up where Devin Trey left off. What do you do in the face of fuck shit? Literally. Like, every major event catastrophe is that big winners and big losers. Whether it be post 9/11, whether it be the Great Depression, whether it be the emergence of, let's call it civil rights. You have companies, people, organizations, clusters of communities who will be affected by this forever. You have others who are able to rebrand themselves and rise from the ashes like the phoenix, as they say. When I take a look at capitalism, which has been a big topic today, and you know, everything from what Master Diaz said regarding, you know, billionaires forsaking their duty and millionaires taking their place and trying to help those that are thousandaires and hundredaires out who are employed. You know, there are big challenges that companies, institutions, people, and leadership need to really step up to really build not just the bonds between countries and organizations, but the faith that our infrastructure, whether it be sports, whether it be music and entertainment, whether it be financial services, whether it be healthcare, whether it be consumer products, has solid footing. So with things like this potentially happen in the future, and they will happen, we know that they will happen. Number one, don't disband those organizations and or those committees that have been put together to deal with issues as such. Number two, be anticipatory, so that you don't have to be reliant on a brick and mortar structure when you can save yourselves and others by investing now and early in technology, so that you can be a institution whose supply chain and or whose students can be readily enabled by education, by means of information and the like. And I'm being somewhat crafty in how I say this, but making sure that you put investments in the right places to protect yourself, to protect your people, to protect your brand in the future is going to be more important post-coronavirus than ever. Because for those who didn't make that investment prior to, when emergence comes, they may not be around.
I love y'all, brothers. I'm glad we had a chance to have this conversation and bring the Section 357 show back off a hiatus for this moment. And I just, you know, add to this. A lot of people around the country, around the world are sheltered in place or some form of social distancing or quarantine or however you want to categorize it. But I just want to give a shout out to all of the folks who don't have the luxury of being able to do that for work. So especially your police officers, your first responders, the folks who drive the buses and the trains for your public transit systems, the folks who pick up your trash, the sanitation workers. I mean, there are a lot of people who still have to go to work in order for things to run how we think they should run. So just want to give a shout out to all of those folks who are still working to keep the infrastructure in place and intact as best as we know it, even though it is changing as we know it. With that being said, this has been the Section 357 show, where we always have the best seats in the house. Until next time, whenever that might be, take care.
I love you, Narcy.